Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
Greetings, everyone. I'm pleased to present Professor Mustapha Diack, the chair of the doctoral program in Science Mathematics Education, the interim director of online learning and professional development for Southern University Baton Rouge, and the assistant vice president for online services of the Southern University System. His research interests are in the areas of instructional design, cognitive theory of multimedia learning, and the strategic planning and deployment of online learning systems to enhance student learning outcomes. Dr. Diack has extensive experience in the areas of online learning design and delivery and has played a global leadership role in the areas of open education and open access. He was the recipient of the International Merlot E-Learning Innovation Award. He is a member of the Merlot Faculty Development Editorial Board and co-founding director of the Merlot Africa Network, a network of African higher education institutions and digital scholars engaged in the research, development, and implementation of open education. At the Southern University System, Dr. Diack oversees the development and implementation of integrated digital library services and the Southern University Online Library for Education. SUOL for Ed facilitates quality online program development and college affordability through the adoption of open education resources and open textbooks. I'll be asking Dr. Diack to discuss his work in this area. Welcome to our podcast series, Dr. Diack.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nichols, and this is really an opportunity to contribute to the Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else, you know, podcast series, and I think I would applaud the effort of the Xavier Center for Advancement for Teaching and Faculty Development, because this is certainly an initiative that faculty, not only within our state, but nationally or globally, you know, would need, you know. And thank you so much for the invitation and for having me.
Well, thank you, Dr. Diack. Could you start off the interview by explaining how and why you became interested in open education resources?
Well, I think that's really a broad question here, and I would personally certainly have to go through some kind of really timeline to explain a little bit what was my first step into open education resources and open access. And all this started basically in early 1999 with some ideas coming to us from the California State University and an organization that's going to be evolving, you know, during the years, that's called Merlot. And that main idea in 1999, that was really to find a way to organize internet resources into searchable, what is called referitory or repository for teaching and learning, and in the meantime, creating some kind of discipline community to enable a peer reviewing of content for quality. Because at that time, when we started, mainly the early 1999s, as you know, that was the development of search engine, and we realized that when faculty needed to find resource for teaching and on and learning, they used to use search engine, and the search engine would render normally some hits. And for the hits that we were receiving, we were not very, very clear about really the quality of the content and how all this can be used for teaching and learning. And right after that, really, I had the opportunity in early 2000 to be selected by the Board of Regents to represent the state of Louisiana to Merlot. I just want to go ahead and get this really off the ground with the definition of Merlot, which stands for Multimedia Educational Resources for Learning and Online Teaching. And around 2000, when we started now to launch the Merlot organization, I was serving as a member of the chemistry and the Merlot faculty development, because we were organized in really disciplined community. I contributed then in the early launching of Merlot and the Merlot technology, like the website right now for the Merlot technology, the quality assurance instrument that we developed really to be able to peer review the quality of resources that were available. And from there, to build a community, we started something that was called the Merlot International Conference, that was called MIC, M-I-C, for community, you know, sharing, you know, and try to build a community around really, you know, global sharing of educational resources. The third point I wanted also to make is that that's really during all that period of 1999, early 2000, 2001. We witnessed as well in December 2002 the novel licensing ideas that we call now Creative Commons. And Creative Commons, for instance, in December 2002 released its first set of copyright license for free to the public. And Creative Commons developed its license. And I really do think that the Creative Commons licensing was very, very critical in really moving with open education resources. After that, of course, in 2001, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, in an unprecedented move, announced the release of nearly all its courses on the Internet for free access. These are elements that were very, very critical in the development of the open education resources. Now, and as the number of institutions offering free open courseware increased, the United Nations, UNESCO, organized, for instance, in 2002, the first Global Open Education Resource Forum. This one as well, when we look at the history of open education, something that was very, very significant. And that's where we start spreading globally the term of open education resources, and that was the name and the definition was adopted really during that UNESCO OER forum in 2002. And now, I mean, if you look at now globally, open education now and open access are really becoming a global movement with a multitude of repository that are now available globally. And certainly for all discipline and pretty much in almost all countries. Now, I wanted to add that because this coincides around on those early years of open education resources, I had the chance to work with a very, very good friend, Jerry Henley from the California State University, who is the executive director of Merlot, to travel really globally to raise awareness about open education resources and to spread really the gospel of OER, open education resources, and open access. You know, as you know, we co-founded the Merlot Africa Network in 2007 in New Orleans during the Merlot International Conference. We started hosting throughout Africa in between 2007 and 2010, something that we called the Pan-African Forum on Open Education Resources that we hosted in different African countries, including Ethiopia, Ghana, Senegal, and those. And during the same period, but this was really late 2008, I had also the opportunity for helping in the launching of Open Education Resource Network in Brazil, really to support the Brazilian community to bring open education on board. So that's just to give you really a brief, you know, oversee of really the development of open education resources, you know, starting since what I would say in 1999, and this is something that I always focus on, that the Merlot organization was really a pioneer. in 1999 really to launch really all these initiatives.
Well, Dr. Diak, I think most people understand the need for open educational resources in underserved countries, and like so many of the ones in Africa. But we have challenges here in the United States, here in Louisiana. How do you explain to our faculties around here the need for open education resources?
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned a little earlier really developing countries, because the need for the developing countries, for instance, to gain access to educational resources were really obvious really to us when really at the beginning of open education resources. That's why if you take in developing countries in Brazil and Africa, this has been really adopted across the board because of the need and the scarcity of resources. But if we take the story, though, back home here in Louisiana and even in the United States, where one of the issues generally that we're dealing with right now is really issue dealing with college affordability. Now, how can OER help response, bring some kind of response or solution to the challenges that we're really facing when it comes to education and higher education. But this is just an issue of college affordability, and one of the natural consequences of widespread OER adoption will be certainly an increase in student educational access and success. This is extremely important. With the average U.S. college student now spending, let's say, $1,200 each year on textbook and other course material on top of tuition, it is easy to see how those costs are hindering low-income students, you know, from attending colleges. And this brings me to not only, you know, all the higher education in the United States, but, of course, with historically black college and universities. And that's not all. A 2014 study by the Student Public Interest Research Group showed that a majority of college students actually base course selection decision on textbook prices and even avoid courses with expensive content. Other students simply don't purchase really the required textbook because the cost is sometimes very, very high. They exceed really the cost of tuition, particularly at the community college level now that have traditionally provided really a low-cost, really alternative really to education. So there are a lot of things now going on in this area with many case studies, you know, for implementing open education resources. If you have a chance really to look for the case study from the Tidewater Community College, because last year the Tidewater Community College in Virginia, you know, accomplished something that was extremely remarkable, relying heavily on open education resources. Now, that community college designed a curriculum that allows students to skip nearly 3,700 in textbook cost. And achieve a two-year degree in business administration, something that was called really a Z degree, as it was known, where, you know, students going to go through all the curriculum, you know, and using specifically open education resources. So that tells you a little bit about really the cost of that program. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah, and in the first year, though, Dr. Nichols of the Z degree, and the research and data are still available, they saw a significant increase in the percentage of student completion, you know, with a C or better. Now, they cut the cost to graduate, you know, by 20 to 30%. Now, they also saw certainly a significant decrease in withdrawal rate among students enrolled in those Z degrees. This is something really that is, I think, some reform that are really going very, very fast throughout this country. I need to add that our state also really have some kind of open education initiative and looking at those. Southern University System just received an innovation grant from the Board of Regents entitled Enabling Educational Quality and College Affordability Through a System-Wide Implementation of Zero Textbook Cost Courses and Degree that we hope, you know, are going to be serving as a model for Louisiana. We're trying right now to develop an associate degree in criminal justice, which is a collaboration between two member campuses of the Southern University System, Southern University Baton Rouge, and our community college, you know, the Southern University Shreveport. Mm-hmm. These are really something, you know, in that area, I think, that are really, you know, very, very important, really, to highlight. And generally, there are really some funding that are available to support these curriculum revision, you know, initiative. The U.S. Foundation, for instance, gave nearly around $8 million each year to get open education resources into mainstream use. So these are really, I think, some development in this area that are really important. Now, if I get back to your core question that was, what advice do I have for faculty who wish to investigate and hopefully use OER? I can tell you that at this point, and I'm sure you and I have started some discussion for some kind of collaborative possibilities between Southern University, the Merlo Organization, and the Xavier University. But I can tell you that the main issue that we have and that we need to deal with is going to be mainly the issue of raising awareness and providing quality professional development.
Mm-hmm.
Research, though, has shown for sure that, number one, faculty don't fully understand how financial stress impacts students academically. This is really a key issue, and raising awareness may be really helpful to tackle that one. Number one, there is a lack of awareness that open education, you know, are an option. Within our own institution, we really need to bring that culture of open education really and prepare our faculty members. Number three, faculty don't know where to find open textbook. And I was glad that in your introduction you mentioned earlier the Southern University Open Library for Education that we launched here within our Southern University System and taking the opportunity to provide professional development to faculty so that they have already a branded repository to our own institution where they can take ownership and identify resources really to be able to promote online learning within the system. And number four, they are generally faculty, I mean, very, very skeptical about the quality of open education and open textbook. There's a lot of research being done. There are a lot of best practices right now in terms of quality control for open education and open textbook that was started by the Monroe Organization long ago. I can at some point certify that there are some organizations like OpenStax, for instance, you know, that are really working on these the quality control, and I can somehow assure you that you know, resources that we have displayed right now through repositories are really quality resources that faculty can really adopt. Now, one of the challenges here I need to mention is that I'm just coming back from a meeting, a conference organized by the Quality Matters Organization. Besides really searching and finding quality open education resources, we need really to focus a little bit more of our energy in designing quality online courses that use
yes.
quality standards. That's extremely important. And think in terms of how can we integrate now the quality open education resources in instructional design and preparing really a faculty, you know, our faculty to do really the good job, really at that level. So as I said earlier, that's just awareness and professional development. going to be really key elements that we really need to pay attention to.
Thank you so much. I agree that probably our next step is to work on integrating the instructional design with these high-quality open educational resources. Could you talk a little bit about the Innovate HBCU group?
Yeah, and I would be certainly very, very glad to do that because, the word is getting out about open education resources and online program, and you and I understand that because with your role with distance education coordinator with Xavier, which is really a historically black college and university, we need to dedicate a little bit more energy to involve historically black college and universities into this conversation. It is too important for us not to be really involved, you know, at the onset. So the raising of awareness and the building that community really to be able to get HBCU on board is really something that, as far as I'm concerned, I do think that our institutions need really to dedicate a lot of energy on that. We need to educate our higher administration so that they understand really what is on stake in there and try to get them on board. Because generally, when the higher administration really are behind this innovation, really to provide college really affordability, chances are you're going to be bringing your community, you know, your faculty senate, your faculty on board, really to be able to raise awareness and try really to deploy on this. Now, and as you know, because you have contributed to this thing, after we launched the Southern University Online Library for Education in collaboration with the Merlo organization, I have been working diligently with the Merlo organization and the Online Learning Consortium to try really to have a forum for HBCUs to be able to meet, to exchange ideas, and to find a way of really to deploy open education resources and nurturing a culture of quality for online learning program. So we have, as you know, launched our first HBCU summit in New Orleans last April, you know, and the HBCU summit was called HBCU Summit on Affordable Learning Solution and Quality Online Program, in which we are right now really targeting 104 historically black college and universities, along with high education African institutions that are really working with those HBCUs. Now, really, you know, getting the conversation within these HBCU institutions is really something that we want to work very, very aggressively in doing. The next HBCU summit going to be held during the Innovate Conference that's going to be held in Nashville, in Tennessee, in April, and I'm hoping that through the podcast and the dissemination of this one, we're going to be able really to promote this within HBCUs to be able really to get them on board as far as really the adoption of OER is concerned. I am working with a Merlo organization and with really a leader with the Merlo organization, Jerry Henley, who's really extremely dedicated to this cause. We have started signing some memorandum of understanding with HBCUs interested in launching affordable learning solution within their own institution. That's why for those listening to this podcast, and if you are part of an HBCUs, and if you are interested in deploying the same technology that Southern University is deploying right now, I mean, please reach out to me so that we can try to see a possibility of signing of memorandum of understanding, see how we can support your campuses really in launching affordable learning solution. I mean, hot HBCUs on the horizon right now, I can cite Xavier University, which I'm hoping going to be one of the next institutions to launch the same technology, really, you know, within their own campuses. We're talking about Dillard University. Prairie View is on board. As you know, Central State University also have finalized a memorandum of understanding to launch, you know, affordable learning solution within their own institution. I wanted to add also that North Carolina Central University also is in the process of signing a memorandum of understanding. And by the way, North Carolina Central University just received a grant of $30,000 to start the textbook course initiative. They are really ready to launch a criminal justice program, and I'm working with them really as a consultant, as a matter of fact, just to be able to see how we can work together and build an HBCU community. Now, I mentioned earlier as well, coming back from the Quality Matters Organization Conference, which is the Quality Matter Connect 2017. The Quality Matter leadership is extremely interested in seeing us build also an HBCU, you know, community within, you know, the Quality Matter Connect Conference. That's going to be looking at really online learning, quality control, and really standards.
Well, that is good news to hear, because I'm one of the peer reviewers for Quality Matters, and I've also been on the national committee to update the rubric the last two times it's been updated. So I'm very happy to hear that.
Oh well, but that's I'm very very happy to hear that, though, Dr. Nichols, because
another possibility for collaboration.
Exactly. Really, as a state coordinator for Quality Matters, I really would like to have the opportunity to extend this discussion and collaboration, so that we can have some local faculty who can serve to peer review courses, you know, within our systems, really for quality control. And I hope
yes, we have two other peer reviewers on campus as well.
Absolutely, I'm going to get back to you on that.
Okay. Well, Dr. Diak, thank you so much for the explanation. I wanted to make sure not only for the Xavier community to get this background and explanation out here for everyone, but also to the other people who are potentially listening for the podcast to hear the information and some of the statistics for the OER. It's something that's near and dear to our hearts, and so I'm hoping that this information will be useful and mind-changing for some other people as well. Did you have any questions for us before we wrap up?
Well, thank you so much. I want to just really to thank you for giving me this opportunity really to share, because open education is basically about really sharing. But when it comes to Xavier, I mean, of course, the natural question is what do faculty and administration think about open education resources? I think polling your institution is really something that would be very important for you to be able to build capacity. Are they aware of the movement per se, you know? So these are, I think, you know, at the onset and internally, it is quite important really to collect those kind of background information to see who's doing what, so that at least you can have some cohort of faculty you can build on as we move on with really implementing open education resources at Xavier. I don't know how much this means to you, and I want to just to conclude to let you know that I'm looking forward to collaboration, and, you know, I'm always available to you, whatever the kind of support you need and I can afford. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, thank you, and good luck. A bientôt.
A bientôt. Merci beaucoup.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else.
For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu.
That's cat.xula.edu.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.